Welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society, and this is our 100th episode of The Deadline. Thanks. And I'm here with Brian. Hey, Brian.
Oh, yeah. After the thanks. Oh, yeah, Brian's here, too.
Oh, come on. I always introduce you. Brian Santian, JGHS technician and producer of The Deadline. This is our 100th show, the 100th time that we have sat here in this, what is now a freezing cold studio, and you're doing the show, our 100th shot at this, huh?
Well, 100th for more you, though.
Why?
Because my voice didn't start coming on until
many
episodes later.
But you were there. You were there recording everything and producing these. And
what a pain in the butt that was.
Yeah, back then, yeah, it was. But we did it. We started out in a little bedroom and... Sorry.
Wow.
I didn't mean it like that. Well, yes, I would sit on the bed and he would sit at the computer desk. And it was the only room I had where it was small enough we could close the door because we had to do it all in one take, remember?
Yes.
Yes, so that's what I meant by we started. From there, we moved on to the conference.
We moved on to the next phase.
To the conference room table. But, no, the conference room. But we set it up on the table. But
where everyone could watch.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Cadbury, it was like that. All the conference rooms were like fishbowls. But, yeah. And now we're out here in this makeshift studio.
In this conference room.
Another conference room. So, times, they are changing. New and improving. But it's been great. I mean, I'm very excited that, you know, we're still doing this. And we actually are getting material now.
Wow.
The new deal for Parashares has sparked an interest. One woman is like, you know what, I hope you don't mind that I'm breaking up my Parashares into three of them. But she goes, I'm keeping track because I want the natal chart. I'm like, no, I do not mind at all. You know, hello. So, thank you. That's really cool. So we got people listening and things are happening. So how's it feel, Brian?
Wow, 100 episodes.
Yeah.
I can't believe I have them all saved. Oh.
Yeah, that must be a hell of a file.
Especially with you talking, yeah.
Well, you know, you have to. Years ago, I used to be on fairly regularly on WMTR. It was a little AM station in Morristown. So it was at MTR's Morristown Radio. And during the day, it plays oldies music, and at night, it does, talk shows and stuff. And Jessie Fries, oh, she's going to kill me, I forget her daughter's name. They would take turns hosting the show. But Jessie is a very seasoned radio personality, journalist. She came from the whole journalism background. So she was very used to doing news radio and talk shows and had met with all kinds of politicians and celebrities and had people over the house. So, you know, you would get in the studio with her. And mind you, little radio studios, they're very cramped. You know, you have enough room to, like, suck up to the microphone. It's about it. You don't move. But she was very used to, like, you know, if she asked you a question, she'd look at you and she'd be like, well, people, you can't see this, but I'm going to Brian's face. And she would wave her hand, like, right under your chin, like, come on, talk. You know, and you'd be like, ah! You know, because she kept saying, it's radio, it's, you know, we're on the air, you cannot have
a
lapse, you can't have dead air, so it's like, you know, keep it moving, and sometimes there were different people, like, after that one plane crash, she had me and a couple other psychics on, and she was, like, really drilling us to say, well, what are you getting, da-da-da, are you picking up anything about this accident, or what was the cause, but it was like, you had to just jump in, and I think that kind of conditioned me. You know, I noticed, like, to this day, it's like the mic, like, he points at me, and it's like, boom, you're on, and it's like, la, 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 la.
And you can't shut her up.
Well, I shut up when I say we're going to commercial break. But, yeah, I mean, Jessie really was, I think, that's where all this came from. I mean, she definitely was my inspiration. I liked, you know, I learned a lot from her about radio and, you know, doing shows, and you know, when we go off the air, it was like, just walking through the studio, and she would be talking to me, and I would see pictures of her while she was with this politician and that, and all. It was just, amazing. And it's like, you know, and I always thought, wow, this is something I could do, would be radio. I don't like the whole TV thing with having to do the hair and makeup, you know. Like, Brian and I sit here like total slobs, you know, like jeans and sneakers. It's like, we don't care because you can't see us. You
know? I dress this way on TV, too.
Oh, really? Oh, God. Anyway, so yeah, it's exciting. It's fun. You're right. I do talk a lot, but that's where the conditioning comes from.
Yeah.
That and growing up, like, in Madison, where it was like, you know, you had to be a fast talker, because I certainly didn't have the physical strength to beat people up.
That and being a woman.
Oh, really? The mouth is correlated to the estrogen level?
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. Well, all right. So welcome to our 100th episode. I'm going to give you the meeting announcements. Now, the Northeast Division is next up at bat on January 31st. That takes place in the Bogota Recreation Center, or building, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota, New Jersey. Team leader Laura Lindemann heads that up. The January 1st meeting I will be at, so yippee, I get to see some people I haven't seen in a while. The Central Jersey Division is on February 6th. That's in the Hazlitt Library, located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. Team leaders Gregory and Sherry Irish will be there. And the Northwest Division, headed up by team leader Dina Chirico, is taking place on February 19th in the Hackettstown Community Center, located at 293 Main Street in Hackettstown. All meetings start at 7 and end promptly at 8:30 p.m. and are free and open to the public to attend. So you don't need an invitation. You don't need to be a member. We always have a share and scare segment, so if you have any pictures or EVPs that you want reviewed, bring them to the meeting. It's not a problem. We're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, you're going to hear a really interesting interview that I did with this gentleman named Dave Grelk. He is the executive producer of the webisode series Irving Rehnquist. Okay, today I'm going to be talking with Dave Grelk of IrvingRehnquist.com. Dave, you're the producer of this series?
I'm an executive producer, and I created Irving Rehnquist. I wrote the series as well.
Okay, all right, so this was totally your idea, your concept, right?
Absolutely. A friend of mine, Mike Knowings, who is the other executive producer, came to me with the idea to do a TV series, and I showed him this novel I had written that revolved around Irving Rehnquist, and he really liked the idea, and so I pitched turning that novel into the series.
Oh, okay. All right, so where'd you get the inspiration for Irving?
Well, Irving is kind of a hybrid of a few things I was really into the summer I wrote the novel. I had just completed reading Gregory MacDonald's Fletch series, which has a very strong, cocky, somewhat unlikable lead character and is very dialogue-driven. And at that same time, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was still in its heyday, and so I kind of sat down and thought, okay, well, what if I combined what I loved about the Fletch books and Buffy and wrote a new story so I could have monsters and ghosts and whatever and expound my theories about the paranormal.
Wow, that's really cool. So then you had this idea a while ago because Buffy hasn't been on.
The novel, I think I wrote in 2003.
Okay.
So it's been a while since that. And then we went into production not last year, the year before, in the summer. And we had a long post-production process from basically September of 2006 through pretty much up until the last episode aired. We were still finalizing everything. We shot one of the shots from episode 9 2 days before it went on the line.
Wow.
So we
not too much pressure.
Things right up until the deadline.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, what made you decide to go the whole web route versus, I mean, I think you said in the beginning they were talking of a TV show, but what made you decide to just solely go on the web?
Well, one thing that is that we knew we could get it on, like, local access channels, and we'd probably get on a few of those. But overall, you know, we wanted this to be something that could reach as many people as possible, and I figured that the ideal audience for this type of show are the people who obsessed over Buffy and went online and talked about it. So if we're putting the show online, then those same people will obsess right after they watch the show online.
Oh, okay.
And we actually have a nice little fan club over at spiritedghosthunting.com. They they were debating the series on what the ghosts were since the very beginning. It's been very cool.
Wow, that's spiritedghosthunting.com?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a chat board site?
It's a ghost hunting group, and they have forums on there, so it was a big topic on their forums.
Oh, okay.
So we were very excited when we saw that we were being discussed so in depth.
Wow, that is good. That is good. So the actors did. How did you find the actors?
Well, we are CMGM Pictures, the company that produced it, is a not-for-profit company that's been making independent, what we call micro-budget films since basically 2002 into 2003 when their first feature was produced. And so we have a small community of actors that we work with a lot. The four leads are all actors that we've worked with several times in the past. But we did do some casting, and we brought in some other people. A few of the directors got in on it. Tricia Nowens, who is the director of episode 3, played a role in episode 6. I directed episodes 8 and 9, and I'm in episode 6 and 9.
Oh, wow. And
so we brought actors in from all different places.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, it's I watched a couple of the shows. Didn't have time to sit and watch all of them. I apologize, but we have been running the commercial on our podcast, so I know people have heard it. The commercial came out great too, and it's finally one day I'm like, you know, I want to sit down and watch this, you know, and because I didn't want to just talk to you having never seen the show. And I had, I have to say, watching it, I really liked it. I mean, the only contention I had was that because my computer locks it into where it's that tiny little screen. Like, I really, you know, I wish I could get it to where I could see it full screen and be like watching TV with it, but.
Well,
yeah.
We're just in the process of putting together a deal with a company called Views.com that is dedicated to running high-resolution, high-quality television from a website. So Irving Rehnquist will be available on there in the not-so-distant future.
Oh, good.
So that's very exciting because they have a very wide viewership, over 17 million viewers, and it's going to be seen in Europe. It'll be all over the place. So that's a very exciting turn with the show.
So do you think that's how the whole webisode platform is going to go? Is that going to be the launch pad of the future for primetime TV, where they'll kind of scope them out on the web first and then decide if they want to pick and choose for primetime?
I really wouldn't be surprised. You know, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of watching television on my TV simply because I have a very nice home theater system, and why would I want to sit in front of my computer with... Yeah, and watch TV when I can watch TV up there.
Right.
But it's getting closer and closer to full integration with the television, and before too long, we'll just have everything in our living room, so we can watch from the computer, from the TV, and with network television kind of dying right now, it'll be great to see independents like us be able to get side-by-side viewing time with the higher-end production. And we'll be able to see, I think, you know, it'll be like true storytelling coming back, because I think things have gotten lost when you're spending all this money, and people can do the same kind of things and tell the same kind of stories on lower budgets easier and easier now.
Yeah, I mean, the Irving Rehnquist show, it does tell the story. Like I said, I watched a couple of the episodes, and it definitely held my attention. I liked
it. That's good.
And the characters are developed. I mean, you can definitely see bits and pieces of this one that you identify with when you've been on a certain team investigating. I mean, from a paranormal investigator point of view, I could see different people that I've had on teams and some of those characters. I was like, wow, this was well thought out.
And that was the greatest thing, is when I started hearing from paranormal investigators and saying that we captured the mundanity of... some investigations, you know, that it's not all about pyrotechnics and the kind of things most of Hollywood would want you to believe ghosts are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know we went a little further than, in fact, a lot further than most parapsychologists and paranormal investigators see, but you have to do that a little bit for fiction.
Oh, yeah, and to just make it, you know, the entertainment value there.
Absolutely.
Because basically what we do is predominantly boring. When you're sitting there in the dark for 6 hours or 4 hours or an hour and a half, and then you've got to go home for 6 hours and review it all. You know, so.
Right.
So how did you, like, I know you said you were into Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all that. No, I mean, was your, like, Do you have a paranormal background? Was it something you have you done investigations?
I've actually only done minor investigations around my own house. I was telling another paranormal investigator that if I spent the time investigating, I wouldn't have time to do the writing about it. So I've, instead of igniting my passion and actually going out and looking for ghosts, I've turned it the other direction and made up my own ghost stories in order to put together my fictions.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But at least, you know, you're not a stranger to it, so you had some idea and just working. Because I can tell on the show that they use the equipment, the different things of EVP and stuff, so...
Well, I think what had happened is I had done extensive research into what it would take for me to put together gear to do ghost hunting, and ultimately I got so into what I might find and my theories about it that I decided to write about it instead.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of gear did you procure while you were doing all this?
Oh, I didn't buy any. I just
Oh, okay. Yeah, it can get on the high end of scale there of expense. Yeah.
And writing doesn't cost that much.
Yeah, true, compared to going out and buying some of the things. But so what? Now, is this something where you always, you know, what's your background? Like writer or TV film producer person? Or was this something you just started out of the starting gates with Irving and said, let me give it a shot for making a webisode or a series?
Well, I'd wanted to be a writer-director for just about as long as I could remember. I've been writing since sixth grade or so. I had some very encouraging teachers who really helped shape my style. And, of course, like most writers, I extensively ripped off people I liked in order to find my actual style. And I finally started to come into it as I went into college. And I did go to film school. And I got involved with CNGM Pictures because I was close with the family of Mike Knowens, who is the head of the company. And basically what we started doing was they were making movies all on their own, and they had one of my scripts that I had written in high school. And while I was out in L.A. with school, he called and said, well, we'd like to make this script. And when I came back, they had just about wrapped up production on their first feature. They were, at that point, juniors in high school, and it was so unbelievably impressive that they were able to accomplish that.
Wow.
So I wrote them a few new scripts, and they did a few movies on their own. And since I had written their first feature, when it came time to do a TV series, I think it was only fitting that I would write their first TV series.
Wow.
And so we've been working as a producing partner for quite a long time, Mike and I. And we had just, after Rehnquist, we produced my first feature that I wrote and directed called Whiteout, which has just started getting some film festival play, which is very cool.
Nice.
Can I plug that website?
Absolutely.
It's white-out-movie.com. It's very different than Irving Rehnquist. It's about my time as a radio host in college. And we're working on a new project now, so we just keep making these little movies, and they keep getting bigger and bigger, though still very manageable on our level, and we just want to see what happens to it. It's all really about exposure, you know. If you can make someone interested in, you know, seeing how interested a lot of these people have gotten in Irving Rehnquist makes me feel very good as a creator, because it shows that they care about these characters as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always, you know, that's a rarity, that you can create something that someone else will care as much about as you do.
Yeah, you know, this is the time, too. I mean, the paranormal field is definitely how it waxes and wanes. It's hitting a high point, you know, in terms of popularity, getting into mainstream living rooms with sci-fi and Ghost Hunters show, and, you know, it's no longer having to hide your head when you say I'm a ghost hunter.
Exactly. And I think in terms of television, geekdom has finally crossed over, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. It's geek chic now.
it's really something else, because back when I was watching Buffy, it still was cool to be a geek.
Right.
And now, almost every major show on the network is a geek-related show. You look at Heroes, you look at Lost, those are geek shows. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful time to be a fan of kind of serial geek dramas. Because it's really, it's very interesting when a show will attempt to tell a much larger story. And a lot of shows get lost doing that. I mean, you know, literally, Lost kind of got lost a little bit during their last season. Heroes got lost this season. Because it's very hard to tell an overarching storyline. That's something that Buffy did tremendously well.
Yeah, it did. That was a good... And even the spinoff, I liked Angel.
Oh, yeah, Angel was fabulous as well.
Yep, I really like that. So those... Yeah, see, I was a vampire geek.
Absolutely. Well, Joss Whedon was a huge influence on me.
Wow.
Because he wrote such interesting, deep characters in these ridiculous situations. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it didn't matter that you didn't necessarily buy the conceit that she was fighting Dracula. It didn't matter because the character motivation was so true, and you felt like these were your friends because you knew people like them. And that's what really I tried to capture with Irving Rehnquist is, you know, it's not really about the ghost. It's about the characters. It's about a girl who lost her mother, and it's about a pair of friends who are just this close to being lovers. And it's about the geeky sidekick who wants desperately to be as accepted as his friend. That's what Irving Rehnquist is about, more so than the ghost.
Right. Now, the couple episodes that I saw, I never saw any ghosts.
The ghosts don't show up till episode 5.
5, okay. All right, that was my next question. Like, well, do they ever get to see them?
Well, really, in the show, we only really see a pair of residuals.
Okay.
And that is shown, and we see some poltergeist activity. We tried to keep as much of the ghost in the hypothetical, theoretical realm as possible because we didn't want to ever definitively say that this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Until the end when we kind of reveal, okay, this is what's been going on all along.
So it
was a very interesting dance that worked very well with our low budget because we didn't have to create ghostly effects too often.
Right. And, you know, sometimes just leaving it up to the person's imagination can be scarier, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You're watching it and you're thinking, oh, around the next corner, or when he opens that cabinet door, this is going to happen. And so you start psyching yourself out.
Yeah. It was the first half of Poltergeist rather than the last half of Poltergeist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that movie, you know, it's funny. I watched that a year or two ago with my kids, and I kept telling them how scary it was when it came out in the movies and everything. Uh-huh. And it was made in 1982, and what a difference. You know, for the kids, they were watching it, and they were like, okay, so this is scary, how? You know? And they're so jaded from having seen the special effects that we have nowadays. And
oh, I know, it's terrible.
And even as I was watching it, I'm like, oh, man, you know, look at the size of that cordless phone. It was huge. And look at the way they're having to click the remote. And look at the size of that TV. I mean, you could just see in 20 years' time, or 25 years' time, how much has changed. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's just, that amazed me, just seeing the time difference, but then, you know, it was a scary movie, and I was watching Irving, and I thought, this is good, there's a plot to this, it's like you're waiting for that thing to jump out, you know, the next second, so.
When our really scary episode would be episode 7, that's one where we pulled out all the stops and we made a haunted house episode. We made it scary as we could.
Oh, cool.
And I think we succeeded very well. It's a very unusual episode compared to the rest of the series.
Wow. Now, the series is contained at 10 episodes?
At 9.
At 9. So is it going to continue? Or?
Well, basically what we wanted to do was establish 2 storylines. The storyline for the season, which is the story of Dottie and her haunted house, and then an overarching story that continues beyond the season, which is the story of Julia's missing sister.
Okay.
And if we do continue the series, where it is still up in the air right now, we've been discussing whether we want to continue it as a series or as a 2-hour movie, what we wanted to do with it, because it was a difficult production, and to mount that again and get all the people back again, that'll be pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. So we do have an outline for a continuation of it, and we did sow the seeds for this continuation all over the place. One of the main clues that has been questioned on our site a lot is something called the Peppercorn Man. And I'm not going to reveal much more than that, but that
okay.
is the major thrust of Season 2 or the eventual movie, whatever we're going to do with that. That's really a story I want to explore.
Wow.
And we've tried to hide as much of that in Season 1 as we could.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure the people listening to this interview are going to check out the site. It's IrvingRenquist.com, and you can also, I'll put all the links, you know, on the deadline page for
wonderful
people to check out the WhiteoutMovie.com and, you know, Irving Rehnquist. Well, of course, we have the link for Irving on our links page, and we do run a commercial. And that way, you know, people definitely check it out because it is worth it. And you might want to just start sending in emails to Dave and bugging him so that they continue the series, like, and see what happens with this Peppercorn Man.
I've had a few people ask me if they can donate money to Season 2. And I said, well, money's not exactly the problem. It's more other things that are the problem right now. A lot of things have to come together to make Season 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. Like you said, just to get all the actors back and everything.
Right. I'd really love to, but right now I'm going to say maybe not, but hopefully.
Okay. All right, so we can leave it at that. Is there any other projects you want to talk about or anything paranormal stuff? Or?
Well, really, the other projects we're working on are, we just finished production actually today on a teen party comedy called Never Have I Ever, which we're looking at putting together for to finalize all during this year and start festival shopping at probably the beginning of 2009.
Oh, okay.
And last year also we developed a slasher movie called Wretched, which kind of turns the slasher genre on its head, and we're very proud of that. And we're hoping that we might be able to put together funding to make this movie on a much bigger budget, probably late summer, early fall. We're hoping to do that now.
So is that like a Rob Zombie level of horror slash?
Yeah, Rob Zombie circa Devil's Rejects, not so much the latest Halloween remake, which was atrocious.
Yeah, didn't even waste time. I was like, wait to rent, and I still am waiting.
my big thing is I've seen a lot of independent slasher movies because a lot of people feel, rather rightly so, that the slasher genre is something that's very easy to sell, and it is. But I think the problem is a lot of independent filmmakers who are making these slasher movies don't necessarily respect the genre and respect what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a big fan of the genre, and I really love what it does and how it does it. So I came to this production to write this script as a loving tribute to the slasher genre, but also, you know, give us everything we want from a slasher movie, but also surprise us along the way.
Wow,
because
very good.
Really that's what needs to be done in slasher movies. We've seen endless, you know, masked killers killing hot teenagers. So how can we do that differently and make it unique and make it fun and make it scary? And that's really what I tried to do with this one.
Wow, that's cool. Is that going to be, well, you said a movie you would shop around to the festival, so that means it would be a movie that maybe some theaters that carry independent films would show?
Well, basically, Wretched, our goal for Wretched would be to start taking it to independent distribution houses.
Okay.
You know, places like Lionsgate Films, they pick up very independent slasher movies and distribute them either in theaters or on DVD. That would be more of a distribution movie than a festival movie. You know, festivals often don't like the slasher genre. Because they feel it lacks the artistic merit. Although we're trying to put as much artistry into this one as we can.
Wow, good. Okay, so it could actually be one of those movies that goes right to DVD, so I'd be perusing in Blockbuster and say, oh my God, Wretched, that's Dave's movie.
And you might see that, yes. Absolutely.
That would be very cool. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for taking time to chat with me here, and I'm sure our listeners are going to get a lot out of this, because this way they can go check out the website, they can watch Irving Rehnquist, they can check out the other movies and projects that you have going on. Is there any other main site you want to send them to, or that I should link to?
We're kind of putting together a new site that's not up and running yet, but if you want to take a look at it, it's got a coming soon page right now. It's moreproductionsfilms.com, and it's more as in M-O-R-E, productionsfilms.com.
More Productions, I'm writing this down, films, plural?
Yes, .com.
Okay, good. All right, well,
right,
I would definitely put a
logo there, but hopefully very soon information about our new movies will start to filter in there.
Perfect. Well, I'll get all the links on the deadline page, and then that way when the show uploads, hopefully we're uploading this show. Well, I think this you're going to go in our 100th episode, which should upload this Saturday.
Oh,
so.
Very exciting.
Yeah, Brian's crossing his fingers. I'm like, it's got to. So, anyway, thank you so much for your time, and I really enjoy the show, and have a good night.
It was my pleasure. You have a great night, too.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night.
Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Happy haunting.
So, what do you do when you catch a ghost?
Burn that bridge when I come to it, I suppose.
Meet Irving Rehnquist.
So, do you still go for any young thing in a little skirt that'll take you?
You're not the sharpest tool in the shed, are you?
An out-of-work, out-of-shape paranormal investigator.
You've been giving me nothing, Irving. Your focus is shifting off this project.
That girl, Dottie, she has a ghost.
We have something!
Can I come tonight?
Do you want to come on an investigation?
Oh, yeah.
This is no time to lose your head.
All right, remember the strategy.
Try not to talk at all if I can help it.
So we split up.
Is that okay?
No, that is not okay. That means I'm gonna eat something that's gonna turn into a giant worm.
Mommy.
Or maybe I'm gonna look into a mirror and I'm gonna see something there on my face and it's gonna make me pick at it until I'm pulling my skin off.
You don't believe that crap, do you?
Hey, you're a ghost hunter, okay? You chase after ghosts and UFOs.
Irving Rehnquist Ghost Hunter. Series premieres October 31st, only at IrvingRehnquist.com.
Hi, this is member David Roundtree, also director of Skylands Paranormal Investigations, wishing you guys congratulations for 100th episode. What an accomplishment. I bet it's really hard to look back and think about episode number one now, isn't it? Looking forward to seeing you guys soon. Take care. Enjoy. Bye.
Hi, welcome back. It's time for Parashare. Now, do you have a paranormal experience or ghost encounter to tell? Then send it in an email to thedeadline@njghs.net. That's thedeadline, all one word, at njghs.net. For each Parashare you submit, and we read on the show, you'll receive one credit. You may use your credits to receive membership in the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society, which only one credit is necessary. That's only one Parashare.
I'm just curious, if they submit it and we read it on the show, is there any we've denied?
You know what? Sometimes people send stuff in and they send pictures and the pictures are really of nothing. And
but that's not a Parashare.
Yeah, but they're trying to pass it off as a Parashare and I've deleted that. So.
But I mean, I don't think there's any Parashares we've said. No, we're not reading it.
Okay, let's spell desperate with a capital D, Brian. Thank you.
I capitalized the whole thing.
Oh, gosh. Or you may cash in 10 credits for a natal chart. That's a $75 value. A natal chart is in astrology. You give me your birth date, time, and place once you've hit 10 credits, and I will send you a full-color printout of your natal chart with my handwritten notes and comments. So it's really worth it, people. That's 10 Parashares. Okay, so we actually have Parashares.
Right? Oh, wow.
Here we go. It says, "Greetings, Laura and Brian. My name is Bill, and I have an experience to share with you. On April 14th, 2006, we went on a field trip with the local camera club. When it was over, on our way home, myself and my now wife, we stopped at a cemetery and went into the mausoleum that is there. I had recently bought a Fuji Fine Pix S2 Pro digital SLR, which I was carrying at the time. When we went into the single corridor, it's not very big, I took a few pictures and proceeded to walk down the corridor reading the names and dates. I had been here before, but it had been a while, like 5 years. Well, I noticed that this corridor had an addition to it. The beginning is visible on the walls. When I went past where the old wall used to be and the extension begins, there was a very noticeable drop in temperature that continued to the end of the building. There were no doors open at the time. I also had a sense something unseen was with me as well, and it did not seem happy that I was there. It was a creepy feeling. I crossed this boundary several times, and the difference in air temp was unmistakable. I had no instruments at the time. I wish I did, and I do now. But the photos I took seemed to reveal some anomaly I did not notice before. For some reason, light seems to stop or is absorbed by something unseen in these pictures. It stops right where the addition begins. I was using a flash at the time. In the last picture is what I noticed right away. There appears to be a face or skull on the floor just past the boundary on the right. It's in number 121 outline. I am very interested to know what your thoughts on this may be and the outline in the last pic. We plan to go back and do something more in-depth in the future. Thanks, Bill. P.S. Happy haunting. Okay, so I looked at the pictures, and while the mausoleum looks very pretty with its flowers on each marker and blah, 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 I only saw it for what it is, a shiny mausoleum with reflections from the glossed marble and the overhead lighting. And then if you were using a flash, you know, did I see a skull or any kind of weird face in the floor? No, I saw a flash reflection. And I did zoom in. I mean, it wasn't, I don't know what you had the camera set at, or maybe you compressed the image before you emailed it, thank you. But having compressed it meant, you know, it was going to pixelate when I zoomed in very quickly, so I didn't really make out a definitive face or skull, Bill, but nice looking mausoleum. Reminds me of the one I went to out in Chicago at Resurrection, you know where Resurrection Mary is? Mm-hmm. Well, I went out with Jamie of Chicagoland Gangster Ghost Club or whatever, and we saw the gate to Resurrection Cemetery, right, where you see the supposed handprints of Resurrection Mary burned into the paint. No matter how many times they paint it, they can't get it over handprints, blah, 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 blah. But we went into the mausoleum there. This mausoleum was the size of, like, a corporate office building. It was gigantic. It had several floors. It had an elevator. Beautiful. And we went up on, I think, the second floor, and I noticed one of those grates that blocks like an air shaft, mm-hmm, was off and just kind of laying to the side. And I'm like, Jamie, why don't you go in there? He's like, what? And I'm like, well, you know, he's a very small statured guy. You know, he's not very tall. So I'm like, come on, you know, you could go in there and take some pictures. I'm like, because basically when you looked in with the flashlight, you could look down and you could see it was the back of where the ashes or coffins were. So basically, by him going in there, he's looking up at all these coffins and caskets and urns and everything. And I'm like, get some pictures, and I'll just patrol out here and look cool. Like, okay, nothing's going on. So, you know, the things I can talk men into, huh?
I'll say.
So, yeah. But that's what this mausoleum looked like. Very flashy and bright and pretty. All right. Now, this next parashare comes from Janine Pugh. It's P-U-G-H. Okay. My childhood experience. I grew up in Gloucester County, New Jersey, Washington Township to be exact. I lived with both parents and my two older brothers. I lived in that house from age roughly 4 to 9. I often felt a presence around me. I knew or know that house was haunted. I would feel a strong desire to go out back on the patio like someone was waiting for me. I remember going out and looking to my right only to see a figure. It reminded me of a gingerbread cookie cutout, only a child size, black and transparent, running around the corner of the house. I didn't tell anyone for a long time. I wasn't frightened. It was just part of life there. However, as I got older and my family talked more of our experience of living there, I did tell my mom this story. I was about 30 when I finally told her. She was shocked. because my oldest brother told her almost the exact same story a week earlier. Now, Janine is smart. She has sent in 3 mini PowerShares because she's saving up for her natal chart. So here's PowerShare number 2. I was living in Virginia Beach in about 2000 with my late husband, Richard. He and I loved the paranormal stuff, though it freaked him out big time. Sorry. My grandmother's husband passed away that night. My mom called to let us know about 10 p.m. Richard and I sat down at the kitchen table, not knowing what to do or say. So I said, I've never had anyone so close to me pass away before. It's so strange. He's out there now somewhere. Where do you think he is? And with that, my daughter's toy telephone began to ring. My husband looked at me, then at his arm where all the hairs were standing on end, and he said, don't say it. Don't you dare say it. Pretty good. Very Twilight Zone-esque. You know, remember the one with the little kid who had the phone, and his grandmother died, and she was calling him on the phone and trying to convince him to drown in the pool so he could be with her to play again. Okay. My husband passed... Now, this is PowerShare number 3 from Janine. Way to go, Janine. My husband passed away... Now, this is sad. He passed away in August 2001. My daughter and I moved back to New Jersey to be near my family the following month. I think they were living in Florida at some point. I don't know. Virginia Beach. Okay. She moves back to New Jersey. Anyway. It was June 3rd, 2002. It would have been our 7-year anniversary, wedding anniversary. I was sound asleep in the early morning. I became half awake because I heard my late husband's footsteps coming up the stairs. I was so tired and out of it. I guess it's why it didn't scare me. I just knew it was him. I just knew. His footsteps reached the top of the stairs and came into our bedroom. I heard him come up to and into my bed. I felt the sheets pull back as he climbed in, and the sheets pulled up as he snuggled up. Then I felt him there, and he said, clear as could be, hi. And she says, insert silly nickname here that I will never tell. Apparently he had a little nickname for her, so he said, hi, nickname. She said, that's when I realized what was happening. I sat upright with my heart pounding and realized the light in the ceiling fan in my bedroom was on. As I went through the house, I saw every light and ceiling fan was on, and it was only 6 a.m. Nice. Very nice. It's very creepy, but nice. All right, we're going to take a break.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
I say, Sean B., I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed! What a shame we don't have any of those traits!
Oh yeah, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostandhuman.com.
Think you know what goes bump in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostanddemon.com. The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
100 podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society podcast. This is John Mark from Garden State Paranormal Research. Congratulations again. Keep up the good work. Bye now.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Haunted Trivia. This is our 100th Haunted Trivia.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! All right, last week's Haunted Trivia, when it was the 99th one, you were asked, what is the name of this haunted home in England? The one where the poltergeist activity increased when a prayer would be said for King George because the lady of the house refused to say Amen. The answer is Epworth Rectory, Lincolnshire, Isle of Axholm in England. Now, I made that one, I hope, exceedingly difficult because I had a little feedback from a little birdie on email who said, you know, for once, could you make the haunted trivia challenging? Apparently, they've been too, I don't know, easy, simple. What do you think?
Well, I know the answer, so.
I know, but do you not think that this one was worthy of challenging?
It's something they'll have to definitely look up.
Okay. You know, I'm trying, people. It's not for lack of trying. So I hope that made that individual.
Or if you think you can do better, send us in a question.
There you go. You know, at least, you know, send in a good haunted trivia. Because right now they're basically going to have enough NJGHS t-shirts to outfit a small army. All right. Here we go. This is this week's haunted trivia. Now this, and you know what? I'll apologize in advance to Garden State Paranormal Research because it has a skill level of kinda easy. Okay, not everybody's a paranormal brainiac. There are many superstitions and rituals of protection in folklore to protect one from the ghost of the deceased returning to haunt. Crossing oneself is the quick fix gesture, and saying God rest his or her soul when speaking of the dead prevents the dead from haunting the living. But what is the correct way to remove a dead body from the home? Now,
on an office chair.
I was going to say, there were two senior citizens in Manhattan recently who kind of got this right. Anyway, be the first person to send the correct answer to Haunted Trivia. It's all one word, hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win the new it's not new, we've had it for a while, the NJGHS t-shirt. So, anything else new, Bri?
No, not really.
Oh, we're closing in on my due date here.
What due date?
The February 2nd due date.
Oh,
which actually, people, I should tell you, he's given me a break. He said in the event that Chris has to work February 2nd but is off February 1st, he will let us slide for February 1st.
Yes.
So that's nice. That's very nice.
I mean, I let it slide a month right in the beginning.
No.
No, right in the beginning, I let it slide a month. Yes, I did.
No, originally it was 6 months.
2 months.
Yeah, and I wanted to slice it down to 3, and then you made it 4 months. So, yeah.
So you should be lucky. I gave you 2 months.
I'm working on lucky. I will be. Actually, I have to say, though, I am lucky. In the sense that I did find such a nice individual who could put up with such an insane situation. As you know, there's paranormal, and then there's my world of abnormal. Yeah! Hi, Chris. Welcome to my insanity. This is my life, you know. And he's still here.
And it only gets worse from here.
Oh, God. So, anyway. So, yeah, so that's pretty good news.
For who?
For me.
Oh, okay.
And you know, and there's a lot of women out there that have been listening to the show. I get emails, or even Dina, I think, is still like biting her nails going, aren't you done yet? Or isn't he going to let you out of that yet? And like Diane, she listens to the podcast and she's like, this is still going on. Oh my God. And so this is good to just give you all an update. We are down to the wire. If worse comes to worse, we will be released and we can have February 1st. You know, in numerology, let's see, 2-1 is a 3. That's body, mind, spirit. That's a good alignment. And 2-2 is a 4, which is laying 4 cornerstones, a lot of balance. Balance. Former gymnast. I got balance, babe. So, anyway, so yes, girls, for all of you out there that have been sitting there, you know, just in empathy for me and dying, you know, and having your uterus shrivel at the very thought of it, you do not have to worry anymore. We are almost there.
Almost, but not quite.
Yeah, well, I can do this. I've been doing it. Torturous, yes, but I've been doing it. So anyway, anything else new? Hey, and you know what? February 2nd is Groundhog Day.
No.
Yeah. I think more people are returning listening for me than they will be looking for Punxsutawney Phil. They're like, was the earth shaking yet? Did she scream?
Well, yeah, but it might be February 1st, so it wouldn't really matter.
Oh. Well, we'll see. I mean, his work schedule is absolutely off the hook insane, so, you know.
Don't have to tell you.
Well, hey, you know, just, we'll deal.
You don't have much of a choice.
No, I know. But you know what? It's all good. It's all good. It's really proven that, I guess this was your point, you wanted to prove that I could put the R back in relationship, take the FWB out, and yeah.
Brian knows what he's talking
about. All right,
about.
Yay, Brian gets an attaboy.
Hey, I was there right along with you, so.
Oh, you mean in commiseration?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When's there going to be an end in sight for your tunnel, oh love?
Don't know, don't care.
All right, ladies, please.
I'm more interested in buying my house.
Oh, see that? He's full-time employed, disease-free, going to be a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, what else? He's good with computers. He's talkative. He's funny. He produces his own podcast show.
He's every week.
Yeah. For the largest paranormal investigating organization in the state. I mean, this guy's got rank and seniority in this organization.
You know what? I could probably say we could even make the boast the largest organization in the country.
Mm.
How many organizations out there have over 500 members?
Yeah, actual paid members, not just the online email list that
yeah.
they approve. That'd be interesting to run some stats on that. Wouldn't I like that for a marketing firm? Interesting to run stats. Hmm. Ooh.
You know what she'll be doing the next couple of days.
You're getting my business hat on. I'm starting to be like, oh, wow. Let me run some numbers. Ooh. All right.
You put that on your book.
Yeah. Or mainly on the website, too. You know, I mean, because there's some organizations like the IGHS, but they're international, so it's not...
Oh, yeah, I saw they just put up what now they're offering a course in what, Reiki?
Reiki?
Yeah.
They're doing Reiki courses.
He just became certified, now he's offering...
He's a Reiki master?
Uh-huh.
Third level?
I don't know.
That's what you got to check. People, let me tell you. Okay,
but
you have to be Reiki level 3 to claim mastership, and then to go and to give their symbols. And when you train, you have to do attunements to someone's aura and align their chakras, and you give them these symbols. And that's each time they move up a level, then they become Reiki master, and they can do Reiki healing.
I don't know, but I remember seeing the email over the weekend, and he is now offering a certification
via mail.
Like
a mail order course for Reiki?
Basically, yeah.
Can't work.
Well, I'm just saying that's what
just
the email
so you know,
said.
There's attunements that are done, and you ask any tried and true legitimate Reiki master, and they will tell you they have to be in person with you.
And he's offering, you know, healings and long distance healings, and that's what the email said.
Okay, well, that was the newsletter.
Yep.
I just saw it and I was like, oh, let me delete it because I don't have time to
eat. Oh, I read it because I was expecting him to say something about, you know, the Ghost Hunters International.
Oh, okay.
So I was expecting...
Did he?
No. He just went on about the Reiki and...
Oh, I mean, Reiki is a viable healing modality. Don't mistake me here. I mean, I've had it. I go for Reiki treatments. I know of Eileen Smith of WhiteRosePath.com, I believe. She's an amazing massage therapist and Reiki master. She does Reiki attunements and trains, you know, gives people the attunements so they can move into mastership and stuff. And it's basically, it just means channeling the universal light energy through. The Reiki master will channel it through. And they usually put you on a massage table, and they will start off at your head. And they don't even touch you. They just hold their hands above you, like a few inches above your head, and they'll do your shoulders. And they'll, you know, they work their way around the body and back up. And you just go out, whether you go out of your body or you just relax. And then they'll pick up things. After the session, they can say, you know, I sense something with your liver, or, you know, you have an emotional heart chakra problem going on, or this and that. And then they can kind of counsel you with it and tell you how best, you know, whether it's herbal or supplement-wise or what have you. But, you know, it's phenomenal healing. Because sometimes when you're just on the brink of getting better, but and yet the doctors aren't really sure why, how, what do we do next, you go for a Reiki treatment and it just kind of, you know, it really right. does work.
Well, like I said, I'm just repeating what was in that email.
Wow. And then I have another massage therapist who used to be really good. I don't know if he's still doing it, but he has the crystal bowls. And he has each bowl...
I bet you'd know.
What? What do you mean? Crystal bowls? They're the real quartz crystal bowls. They're huge.
Oh, crystal bowls.
Bowls. B-O-W-L-S. Get your mind out of the gutter. And he has all seven of them, so each one is tuned to a note that correlates with one of the seven chakras of the human body. And what I would do is book, like, if I had been working as Laura Aura, where I would read, what, 200-300 people in a span of 4 or 5 hour party, I would definitely need to get psychic lice and gunk off of me and just feel better. So I would book a 90-minute session with Joachim. He would do massage, and then he would stop, and then he'd either he'd work in, like, the flute playing. He did flute. He did sitar. And then he would take a crystal bowl, and sometimes he would just have to ring the bowl because it was too big, he couldn't pick it up. But the smaller ones, he would put right on the correlating chakra, and boy, when they do that, it's like you feel like you take whatever high you've ever had in your drug days of teenagehood and multiply it by 100, and that's the crystal bowl on your chakra, on your stomach. Oh, my God. But it really... it resets them, it gets them spinning in the direction they're supposed to be, and you're just melted by the time you're done between the massage and all of that. The only thing I will caution you is with know your practitioner. If you go to a massage therapist who has maybe a closet addiction of drinking or drugs, guess what? They're touching you and their energies are negative because they have all those toxins in them and it comes through. So, you know, I've had some practitioners that afterwards I felt even worse than before I went in, and then I found out, oh my God, they were an alcoholic, and no wonder, you know. So it's all energy, people, right?
Yep.
So that's what they're doing now. They're shipping out courses on being Reiki masters.
Yep.
You know, I better start doing my lecture I used to do years ago, which was called the New Age Rage. And I was going around at all the Borders and Barnes and Nobles and doing this New Age Rage thing. And I was, you know, I would cover all the different things, like finding a psychic before a charlatan finds you. People, if you go for a psychic reading and she says, oh, you have a curse upon you for $500 or a refrigerator from Sears, I can rid this curse, it's bogus, okay? It just doesn't, right? It doesn't work that way.
Nope, never does.
You know? most legitimate psychics will tell you, you know, like, well, they'll just tell you the information, you know, and then if they start going into where they're charging and doing readings, but they are legitimate, you know, like, even like me, if I'm doing a reading and I'm just not getting anything, I'll just say, hey, it's not working, and I don't charge the person because I'm not going to take money for, and I'm not going to make anything up. It either works or it doesn't, you know. You have to have your, I don't know, your integrity intact, but, yeah, so... Reiki.
Yep.
Interesting. Wow. Next, they're going to be doing Tai Chi.
Order now. You'll be a Taekwondo Tai Chi master.
No, probably just like a become a certified psychic.
Yes. Wow. Boy, amazing. I wonder what other clubs are up to now. I see other clubs are jumping on the Fort Mifflin bandwagon now.
Bastards.
And Fort Mifflin is raising its rates now, right? They've figured out they've got a popularity thing going?
Well, that and, I mean, they don't really get much money from the city at all. They get enough money basically just to keep basic things running.
Yeah.
I mean, the caretaker, he lives on property. So, I mean, everything else is just donations.
We haven't heard anything from Eastern State in a while.
No.
Bummer.
Oh, well.
I like that place, though.
I do, too, but look at the pricing.
Yeah, it's getting...
I mean...
Well, we don't make anything when we do the certification, and now it's actually going to start costing us unless I raise the rates.
So, I mean, honestly, I'd rather take people to Fort Mifflin, because you know what? You get tired... Just go inside and sit down. They got snacks and stuff for you to relax.
Let's just get tired, crap. You're on a case. There's no time for fatigue or resting.
You want to bet?
How kind of investigator are you?
Yeah, 6-7 hours walking around, you get tired.
Yeah. I remember when I stayed at the Myrtles, I was just, you know, I could be asleep, and I could hear a click, and I'd, I need to change the batteries in this, oop, I need to change the disc in that, and all night. And then the next morning, I'm like at breakfast, Rob's like, wake up. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's the deal. That's all part of ghost hunting. It's like, you know, the thrill of pulling that all-nighter. And
well, I've done it two times already.
Yeah. I remember when we did in, oh, you weren't there. This was a long time ago. It was in the touch, and when we had the elemental.
Nope.
Ugh, and they left me in the room, and I was taking first sleep shift where you could just doze for like a half hour and everybody else would stand guard, and they ended up letting me sleep in the room with the thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then I wake up, and what woke me up was the smell of it, because it does have a distinct rotting flesh odor, mm-hmm. This elemental. And I wake up and I'm being quiet and I'm like, hey guys, are you getting this? Are any readings? And then I realize nobody's there. And I hear snickering coming from the living room, and I like open my eyes enough, and I'm like, I go out there, and they're laughing. They're like, "Oh, we left you alone there." I'm like, "Dudes, it's in there. You're sitting out here thinking you're being funny. You just missed it. All the equipment was with them, and they're sitting in the living room thinking how funny we left her alone." I mean, you know, really. Well, those were back in the newbie days, but yeah, but that was an elemental, and it pictures that were drawn of it from the kid and the other people who had seen it, really nasty. That was going to be in my book, but now that I have to write Ghost Hunting New Jersey, and it has to be public places that people can go to.
Gotcha.
So even though this was in New Jersey, I can't include it in the book that I'm now.
That'd be book number two.
Well, this, I already have it all written. I've got that one written up. I've got the whole Ouija board and the very scary he's whose name we cannot ever mention again because it would pull him back from the other side thing.
Yes.
That's an amazing chapter. That's all written up, but then I had a back burner that whole project because I got stuck with the 6-month deadline on this other book. And not stuck. I mean, believe me, I'm not looking at it as getting stuck. It's a godsend. It's phenomenal. It's a great experience getting to go around. I'm getting to go down to a you know, the place down in South Plainfield or whatever, or Piscataway, Liquid Assets.
Oh, okay.
I spoke to the owner there. He called me back like right around, it was like New Year's Eve. He said, oh, I got your email. And I said, oh, is it all right if I put you in the book? I said, I just got to send in this table of contents now. And I said, after the new year, which I will, I got to give him a call. But he said, oh, I would love to be in the book and have an interview and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. So, as much as it goes against my moral grain for the exploitation of the female body for profit, I will include it in the book because it does have a documented significant mm-hmm. haunting thing. So, and I'm sure all the guys out there will be like, cool.
Make sure you take lots of pictures.
Just, yeah. I'll be like, let's check out these orbs. Just like our 6 feet underwear business. Oh, well. So, that's that. So, if you're looking to become a Reiki master by mail, then you can go to the IGH. What are they? Ghostweb.com? Is there a website? I think it's ghostweb.com for International Ghost Hunter Society. Anyway, Stay tuned to the mjghs.net website so you get the latest and greatest info and our meeting information, and you keep an eye out for the special event that's going to take place September 20th of this year. That's going to be uploading soon, if not by the time the show airs, and soon, probably by the time the show airs. You can also sign up for the NJGHS Yahoo groups. It's on the link is on the homepage of NJGHS.net, and that way you get the latest, greatest information blasted right into your email inbox. Can't beat it, right, Brian?
That's right.
Okay. Thanks to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician, producer of The Deadline, and our making our 100th episode a reality. Oh! I promised myself I wouldn't cry. Okay, and our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish, Dina Tirico, and Laura Lindemann. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening, and keep downloading these shows weekly, because at some point we may actually make the 200th episode, and at any point you may have to meet the deadline.